What are you even worried about? It's Worry Week on The Wire.
In line with our talks about sex work for Wire Worry Week, I spoke with National Coordinator for the New Zealand Prostitutes Collective, Catherine Healy, about the state of sex work within New Zealand, the challenges the industry is facing, and recent criticism her organization has received. She started by telling me a bit about the organization.
NZPC's been operating for 30 years. We established as a sex worker organization and have community centers and outreach programs. We also have sexual health clinics inside our community centers, and we work with thousands of sex workers throughout any one year.
What are some major issues around sex work within New Zealand currently?
Well, I think one of the biggest, most contentious issues relates to the status of migrant sex workers. So we have a population of sex workers who are working against the law. They're not allowed to work if they're migrants. That is of concern not only to our organisation, but other people as well who have contacts with them. For example, we come across situations where they're being exploited and they're ignorant about the nature of the law. They're working because they might be studying here, or they might have come over on a partner relationship and they're trying to have some means to support themselves beyond that relationship. You know, there's a whole manner of different circumstances that we're coming across with this particular group of sex workers. But in the main, we work day in, day out with sex workers who are allowed to work in New Zealand, and we work on issues that they confront. Some might be concerned about things to do with their sexual health and their sex work practices. They might be looking at ways to address issues in their workforce. So we work with a whole spectrum of different kinds of issues that sex workers face.
Does your organisation kind of operate somewhat like a union?
Well, often we're called upon to do things that, you know, in the absence of anyone else being able to do it. Because we have extensive insider knowledge, people have been sex workers or still are. We understand the nature of the relationship that occur inside managed brothels, for example. You know, there might be a standoff scenario where a sex worker might be saying, look, I'm being made to pay fines, is that right? And we would say, no, that's not right. That's coercive. That, you know, practices like that should not exist in any workplace related to sex workers. In the absence of a union, we do pick up on occasion those sorts of issues.
Jumping back to what you said earlier about migrant sex workers, there was a letter recently put out to government from Lisa Lewis who criticized your organization for promoting that. Why do you think that is?
You know, there's a misperception, I think, with Lisa's idea about our organization. And I mean, we're against discrimination. And the legislation, as it stands at the moment, discriminates against sex workers as the only occupation that is discriminated against. Ideally, we'd like to see an end to discrimination. And I think, you know, Zealand sex workers go and work in other people's countries, and, you know, that's of concern to us as well, because they're having to work illegally when they leave New Zealand, unless they're going to New South Wales and Melbourne and Queensland and Australia. We are concerned the law, and if it's hostile to any particular group of sex workers, it doesn't enhance anyone's health, including the health of the country, if you like.
One of the things that was said in this letter claimed migrants coming on temporary visas to work as prostitutes were taking money off legal sex workers, not paying tax and going home with the money. How is that kind of mentality problematic?
I think it's quite a raw way of looking at something that's quite complex. While we have a great deal of sympathy for sex workers who say that they're doing all the right things, and then, you know, there's another set of circumstances where sex workers are unable to do the right things. You know, we do have sympathy with that, but it is quite a complex situation, and I think it would be impossible for us to ignore a population of sex workers and uphold what needs to be upheld in respect to public health. It would be wrong to turn away and say, look, you know, sorry, we can't deal with these sex workers. They're in an extremely vulnerable situation. We don't promote for any sex worker or person to break the law. We certainly aren't in favour of people being put into that situation. But it's awkward and it is quite complex.
So with this letter coming out, response from the public, there have been a couple issues taken from the public, which I was hoping you could respond to. Some people who work within sex work say they've never even heard of you and feel like they've been abandoned in a way. Do you think your organization is getting as wide a reach as it could?
I think, you know, certainly there will be some sex workers who haven't heard about us. We'd say that the majority have. We have somebody constantly working, trawling through the advertisements and making contact with people to make sure that they've heard of us, sending out information packs and so on, and networking. I mean, we're not a huge organisation. We're trying to, you know, make contact with a population that turns over quite quickly as well. So it would be, yeah, I mean, it's certainly true that there would be a small number of sex workers who haven't heard from of us. But the majority, I'd say, have, and we have sexual health clinics that run at our community centres, and sex workers come in. So from all over the country, we have contact.
How do you think government and society could work to make sex work a safer industry to be employed in?
Well, we've been working on this for 30 plus years, and we're well researched and we've been well evaluated, and I think New Zealand's held up as a gold star country because by the UN, for example, who say that, you know, we've got all the elements in place to work to make sex work safer. The big thing, of course, was to have the legislation repealed in 2003 when it allowed for sex workers to have good information to work in the way that they can do, supported by the law.
Perfect. That was all my questions. Did you have any other comments you wanted to make?
Well, I think, you know, it's true that there are a small number of sex workers, Lisa Lewis and two of her friends, who have written an open letter, along with, I think, about 10 supporters who aren't sex workers. So, you know, that's a very small number of malcontent, and certainly they've got an issue that sort of see that migrant sex workers, in their view, are taking income away from them. But I think it would be irresponsible of our organisation to ignore this population. We have concerns in relation to public health, and we have concerns in relation to exploitation, and we're not going to stand back and see a population of vulnerable sex workers ignored.
They are nicking our shit. They totally are.
The Wire.
You're tuned into The Wire 95BFM. It is 12:46. We've got a few, we've had some texts, a lot of texts in today, Connor, about your Singapore topic, and a few calls as well.
Absolutely have. We had a really good response, and I just kind of, because we had such a good response, I kind of want to keep it going. So I'm just going to reiterate the question, which is, you know, Singapore, they kind of enforce their racial harmony and religious diversity and their language and culture diversity through laws. If New Zealand was given the same opportunity to, if someone said you can have racial harmony, religious freedom, all the social ills of poverty and homelessness cured if you gave up free elections, freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, the right to protest, all that stuff, would you do it? Would you be cool with a New Zealand like that? We've had a lot of people saying no. If you believe yes, if you believe yeah, we should give up those freedoms to achieve those things, do text in, tell me why. 5395.
We'll be back right after the break. Stay tuned.
Suzanne Vega.
My name is Luca.
Tuesday, August 7th at the Bruce Mason Centre.
I live on the second floor.
Making her long-awaited return to New Zealand, Suzanne Vega, performing songs from throughout her career.
I'm sitting in the morning at the diner on the corner.
Suzanne Vega, Tuesday, August 7th at the Bruce Mason Centre. Tickets from Ticketmaster.
It's your Kiwaha o Te Wiki, your saying of the week. This week,
Anna Tokai serves you right.
Sis, I just got out of my exam and I think I failed.
Anna Tokai, too much Fortnite. Anna Tokai serves you right.
It's your Kiwaha o Te Wiki, brought to you by Ngā Tauira Māori, the University of Auckland Māori Students Association.
Yeah, kia ora. It's Tony here from Te Kauiti. Well, I've been listening to your sheep show every week with the girls week in, week out, and I hold out for some actual sheep content. You know, it's all music, and I've had a gutful. How about a little less the clean and a little more how to clean your Toyota Hilux after a massive dagging session? Does the B stand for bullshit? Either pull your bloody head in or change the name of the show, OK? Thank you.
Ovinophiles are welcome to listen, but Freak the Sheep is really about that good, good New Zealand music. Zach Arnold hand-delivers interviews, live performances, tempered classics and wretched demos from Godzone. Sheep with Zach Arnold every Wednesday night 9 till 11 on 95BFM. Thanks to Flying Out, flyingout.co.nz.
To understand the distinction,
the wire.
Kia tau te rangi marie, o rangi nui e tui honei, o papu tuanuku e takatonei, o te tai ao e awhinei I a tātou, tihei Māori ora.
This is the Green Desk on 95BFM.
You're on the Green Desk, 95BFM. Jack Marshall is at work at Amnesty. He works at Amnesty International. He's got a few jobs, Jack Marshall. He's a great man. He said he's tuned in, so I thought I'd give him a shout out. But this week on the Green Desk, Jack has a chat to Karen Schumacher from the East Taranaki Environment Trust about two native kokako who finally have been able to be released in Taranaki following successful pest control efforts. Jack started off by asking Schumacher how this all started up.
It actually started quite some time ago. Our organisation, which is called the East Taranaki Environment Trust, started in 2004, and from 2006, kokako's been in our long-term plan. So we started actively working on that 8 years ago. Our initial project was focused on kiwi, where we've now got over 4,000 kiwi and growing at 9% a year of population. So we felt comfortable to start focusing on our kokako. It takes time to get your project area and your habitat right for kokako, making sure that you've got your rats down, you've got your possums down, your stoats down, and your habitat coming right. And then you've got to wait for birds. We were really thrilled last year when the recovery group and the Department of Conservation said that they had enough birds to actually be able to give us some birds so that we could start to develop a population of kokako that would then help the wider New Zealand populations. It was earlier this year that the department made the decision that these birds should come from Hauturu, Little Barrier. It's the first time kokako have come off Little Barrier. They were at capacity and they were finding that the juveniles were not surviving over there. So for us, it was a huge privilege that we can help. And so on the weekend, we had the first two, which we call ambassador birds, came down and they were brought down by the iwi representatives from up there.
Oh, amazing. And so like another really big part of that is just spend a little bit of time with learning about birds and tiritiri mātangi and just like learning about the lack of genetic diversity is like a really big problem for these kind of birds, because we've got these amazing, you know, predator-free areas, but there's just too much of the same birds getting it on, and it's not good for the genes.
One of the exciting things about this was there has been some tests done around the genes for the Hauturu birds, and they discovered they've got a different gene to all the other kokako on the mainland. Now, most of the birds in Hauturu have come from the Bay of Plenty, except there was the last two birds from Great Barrier Island that were taken off there and put onto Hauturu. I think it was in the late 1990s. And they are the only two that were different. So they're attributing this different gene to that Great Barrier Island bird. So that's why these birds are so, I guess, important for the national genetic base of kokako. We were thrilled that we actually had someone from Great Barrier also came down with these birds. So it's developed for us a fantastic base of a relationship that's going to be enduring.
Mm. And are they not actually big enough to fly like from Little Barrier to the mainland? Because they look like they're pretty decent-sized birds.
Kokako are very poor flyers. they describe more like they run up a tree like a squirrel. They just scramble up. What they do is they race up the trees and they glide from a top down to trees further down. They are actually very poor flyers.
Ah, and just to give the listeners out there a bit of a description, they've got these like beautiful little, what would you call that, the blue kind of...
The wattle.
A wattle, a wattle.
It's a wattle.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're beautiful birds. And yeah, this is why I'm so excited about it, because I'm a bit of a, not quite an ornithologist. I feel like it's maybe a bit too far, but just birds are just really, they just look nice, they sing, and we need more of them.
We do, and that's why we're so excited that we'll end up with, you know, our goal is to help these birds, provide a place for them to thrive so that they can become a sustainable population. It was honestly the moment out there when we were releasing, we were thrilled that we had so many from our local iwi, Ngāti Maru, joined us. There was kids, there was all ages, all generations. And it was really quite a, I guess, spiritual moment that as the birds were being released, we had the two that were designated to do the karakia, but behind me, because I was near the front, there were so many people themselves that were doing their own personal karakia and blessing of those birds. It was just such a special thing to be part of.
Yeah, I was thinking, we're only at a stage now kind of in conservation and thing practices in New Zealand that we can actually start kind of repairing the land from like just the damage that's all been done. Because most of the time with, you know, any humans anywhere, we just kind of kill the native animals and things. But this is kind of one of the first times we can, you know, start healing the land again.
You're right. We've been really lucky, and that's what we've found with all of our locals out there and the landowners. And for us, it started with our Kiwi, and we've always said that the Kiwi are just part of our community, and our locals have embraced that, and they were there in great numbers on the weekend because we've made a success of that within our project. Our project, I might add, is 13,000 hectares, so it is a landscape-scale project, and it's shown that with trapping, we can make a difference in our area. We're really quite lucky. We've had a long-term enduring relationship with Good Nature, the team of awesome guys that have developed the resetting traps, and we've got quite a network of them out there in our project, which will help the kōkako. In addition, for the kōkako, they are hugely expensive to catch and to transfer and to bring down. So it costs us between $2,000 and $3,000 per kōkako to get them onto our site. So for us, we've been fundraising. We've been hugely thankful that Methanex New Zealand, an oil and gas company, have come on board and are being partners with us for this project for the next 3 years. And we're getting their staff are out there volunteering. They get what we're doing. It's awesome.
That was The Green Desk on 95 BFM. Tihe Māori Ora.
That was The Green Desk with Jack Marshall. It is 3 minutes to 12. We've got one more segment. It's Everyday People.
Leonard Powell presents Everyday People on 95 BFM.
So earlier in the show, I chatted to Craig Nielsen from Auckland Transport. When I was walking back, I realised I hadn't done Everyday People this week, and I was about to walk up the steps to BFM, and there was a nice elderly gentleman who's named Terry, I found out, and he was sitting in the sun just smiling, enjoying himself, and I went over and had a chat to him, and he's been working at Auckland University at the moment in the exams, being one of those dudes who walks around and makes sure no one's cheating and whatnot, and he was just enjoying some sunshine, and he was happy for me to ask him the questions. So here it is, Everyday People.
Leonard, my name's Leonard, by the way.
I'm Terry Lord.
Terry, hi. So just say your name and what you do first, Terry.
I'm Terry Lord. I'm a retired teacher. I'm currently supervising university exams.
All right, Terry. So the first question is, what gets you out of bed in the morning?
Well, life. So many opportunities. Retired from teaching to start a new life.
And when you're stressed, what do you do about it, Terry?
I seldom get stressed, but a walk is probably a good thing if I do feel a bit down.
And Terry, what's some advice or wisdom you would give to other people?
Be active. Enjoy.
I like it. The second to last question is, what scares you?
Nothing? No, I can't think of anything that really scares me.
That's good. Not even the dark?
No, the dark, no. Once I turn my hearing aids off, I don't hear anything, so, you know. No, I'm quite content, as you gather.
I like it. And just finally, what is the key to happiness for you?
Friendship. Having social contact.
Those were your everyday people on 95 BFM.
That was The Wire.
That was The Wire for Tuesday, the 19th of June. The year is getting on, and this show was jam-packed. We're going to run into Jin's show if we're not quick, Connor. So quick outro here, mate.
So, yeah, absolutely. I've seen the text coming in. There's an extra one there if you want to read it out.
No if and way, exclamation marks. Our freedom, we need it. Don't take it for granted. Let government fix those other problems.
So this has been cool. It's been like a covert experiment to see if people like freedom, democracy, and freedom of speech. And it seems like they do, which is healthy. It gives me faith for the next election.
All right. All right. Connor's in a good mood. Lots of texts, lots of calls, and England won the football. Jin's up next with the 1-4. Stay tuned for that. It's going to be an eclectic mix of music, as always. Just thanks to everyone who came on the show today. Craig Nielsen from Auckland Transport. We had Dame Catherine Healy. We also, Jack Marshall, chatted with Karen Schumacher. Connor, thanks as always, mate. Appreciate your good work.
No worries.
And do a good time while I'm away. I hope everyone's having a good Tuesday out there. Keep smiling, and have a good one.
See you later.
Bless.
L'essentiel est qu'ils comprennent. L'essentiel est qu'on se retrouve. Parce que si, l'essentiel est fondamental.
The Tuesday 1 to 4 on BFM with Jin. Jin.
Again, but happy.